Welcome to the show that gets Christians thinking about faith and politics. Get ready to challenge the status quo, expand your imagination, and tackle controversy head on. Let's stand together at the intersection of faith and freedom. It's time for the Libertarian Christian Podcast.
Welcome to another episode of the Libertarian Christian Podcast, a project of the Libertarian Christian Institute. I am your host, Doug Stewart, and back with me is Cody Cook, author at LibertarianChristians.com, author of a book, What Belongs to Caesar. You can hold that up, Cody. I think you have it right there. For those of you watching, you can see us discuss biblical passages, and we sometimes use props like holding up the translations we like the most, or at least in some capacity. And what we're going to do is read through some scripture passages and talk about problem passages for libertarian Christians. And problem as in the sense of like it poses a problem from other Christians. Hey, have you read this Bible passage? You shouldn't be a libertarian Christian if you've read Romans 13, or if you've read 1 Peter 2 or 2 Peter 2 or whatever the passage is. I always forget. Honor the emperor. Anyway, we've already discussed the passage Render Unto Caesar in a previous episode, and Cody and I talked about that. So you don't have to listen to that before you listen to this one. They're definitely standalone. I mean, we might reference the ones we've already recorded, but they are definitely standalone. So tonight we're going to go over Romans 13, or if you're not listening at night, we're recording this tonight. That's why I said that. So, Cody, I'm just going to stop talking myself into poorly constructed sentences, and let's just get into it. Why is Romans 13 a potential problem for libertarian Christians?
Yeah, so Romans 13 is generally appealed to justify obedience to government, basically any unpleasant or wicked government action, from Imelda Marcos's shoe closet up to slavery and the Holocaust. So it's this kind of go-to passage whenever the government wants to do something bad and wants you to shut up and just accept it.
Shut up and obey, right?
Yeah. So for example, you know, under the Trump administration, I don't know if you remember Attorney General Jeff Sessions, he was trying to silence evangelical criticism of Trump's immigration policy by citing Romans 13. He said, I'm trying to remember how he talked. I was going to do an imitation, but I won't. I would cite you.
Where's Matthew Bellis when you need him?
I hear in my head is like Dana Carvey doing George Bush Sr., but I don't know if that was how he actually said. I don't remember. So I would cite you, he said, to the Apostle Paul and his clear and wise command in Romans 13 to obey the laws of the government because God has ordained the government for his purposes. And, you know, there was some pushback on that. White House Press Secretary Sarah Huckabee Sanders doubled down, saying it's very biblical to enforce the law and it's a moral policy to follow and enforce the law. And so for them, anything the government does, any law that exists should be enforced. And that's what Romans 13 just says. And that's all there is to it.
All right. Let's wrap it up then. Yeah. That was the shortest episode. Sorry, guys. This is the finale of our show. We're done.
We're now just the Christians Institute. We're going to remove the libertarian from the sign and close up shop.
I think it'd be important for us to read the passage. So I think what's interesting is we've been doing this on this little series that we want to do here on problem passages. I think it's really helpful for people who are driving and are, you know, doing things while they don't have a Bible right at their hands. We're going to read it out loud. Cody's provided the ESV text here. I'm going to read from it, and then he's going to give some thoughts, and we'll just have an interaction and exchange. So this is Romans 13, verses 1 through 7, not the entire chapter, which is kind of important. But anyway, let every person be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those that exist have been instituted by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authorities resists what God has appointed, and those who resist will incur judgment. For rulers are not a terror to good conduct, but to bad. Would you have no fear of the one who is in authority? Then do what is good, and you will receive his approval. For he is God's servant for your good. But if you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. For he is the servant of God, an avenger who carries out God's wrath on the wrongdoer. Therefore, one must be in subjection, not only to avoid God's wrath, but also for the sake of conscience. For because of this, you also pay taxes, for the authorities are ministers of God attending to this very thing. Pay all what is owed to them, taxes to whom taxes are owed, revenue to whom revenue is owed, respect to whom respect is owed, honor to whom honor is owed. There it is. Romans 13, 1 through 7.
Apart from your one little misstep there, you did a great job. When you show up to public events, do people say, do Romans 13?
No, because the only thing now is that I have is an ESV version. I don't even read out of that one. So there you
go. So that is Romans 13, at least the part that's quoted in conjunction with justifying anything government wants to do. So there's a lot to sort of keep in mind here. what you see a lot of folks do, I've noticed on the kind of anarcho-Christian or libertarian Christian side, is to quote David Lipscomb, who was a 19th century leader of the Christian Restorationist movement. And he wrote this book called Civil Government. And at one point, he's talking about Romans 13. And he says, quote, "How can he be said to be a minister to thee for good?" Obviously, he's using the King James. "In the same sense that all things work together for good to them that love the Lord. In the same sense that Nebuchadnezzar was his servant, that Babylon was his battle axe. Then all the persecutions that came upon Christians, even in the days of Nero, were needed by the children of God to promote their true and eternal welfare," end quote.
You did a really good job reading that, Cody, except for that one little misstep.
So yeah, so basically what he's kind of getting at is, well, you know, in the Old Testament, God uses the state in this way. So he uses Babylon, Nebuchadnezzar, to punish Judah, right? And that ultimately fulfilled his purposes. So Babylon is not presented as intending to serve God's purposes or as having good motives. Lipscomb goes on to say that hell is also, quote, "an ordinance of God to punish wickedness. The devil, the ruler over hell, is God's minister to execute wrath and vengeance in the unseen spirit land. It is a terror, hell, to evildoers. Hell itself ministers good to the obedient servant of God. To seek to resist or overturn hell as the institution of God for punishing sinners and destroying sin would be to resist the ordinance of God and would bring swift damnation to the inhabitant of the spirit land that would dare such a thing. So too, human government is God's ordinance to punish sinners," end quote. So nevertheless, Christians should avoid entering government as much as we should avoid entering hell.
I could go with that summary. That's good.
Yeah, I have some beef with it, how he understands hell and Satan's position.
I mean, that's a good start, is what I'm trying to say, yeah.
Yeah, but the spirit of it, right, that government is an appropriate place for Christians as hell is.
Government is hell. That works.
Right. I was going to say hell is other people, but you have to make a connection there to the state. So that's what Lipscomb says. And I think he brings up some interesting points, but I think we can say more than that. So first off, Paul's claim that Christians should be subject to the state because authorities are instituted by God and carry the sword to avenge against those who do evil, even if we take that at face value, it's not an endorsement for blurring the lines between church and state. So I want to say that first of all. So regardless of what you think Paul is saying about the state, this isn't necessarily, he's not inviting Christians to participate, which is what some people sort of read into here. Mm-hmm. And so whatever we want to say about state violence, it's no place for Christians. And here's why. The preceding verses in chapter 12 distinguish what the state does, use force against its enemies, from how Christians are expected to behave. And if you read carefully, and especially if you look at this in Greek, you'll notice that Paul uses a lot of the same words in chapter 13 that he uses in 12. He talks about vengeance. He talks about the sword. And so Romans 12, 19 through 21, "Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God. For it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good." So whereas the state is an avenger for God in 13:4, the Christian is told to be the opposite, to never avenge, but leave room for God's wrath, which could be exercised either on the day of judgment or vicariously through state violence against the wicked.
I want to make a point here that I think a lot of us kind of know this, but right, the importance of it is actually worth noting. And that is, we started off at, well, not quite the dead middle of Romans. We started off at what we call Romans 13:1, but this isn't like Paul was writing blog posts. And this happens to be the 13th installment of his blog post to the Romans, right? He's not starting over with a new concept necessarily at the beginning of each chapter. In this case, it seems to us that whatever he just wrote in Romans 12 just kind of carries into Romans 13. And so it blends a whole lot more than just like, hey, here's a chunk we need to read. And so this is where verses and chapter divisions do an injustice to the text, or it just kind of messes with our brains in the same way that, you know, certain things like word puzzles do. It's like, oh, they set it up in a certain way to make your brain think one way, but that's not how the puzzle works. And it's a good thing to have, obviously, because we can all refer to, hey, here's where Paul says such and such. But it's very difficult to be like, oh, well, what did he say before? Well, it's not difficult. It's not a habit we're often into until you're really studying it.
And I think we have to ask some questions here about how 12 is leading into 13. So one way to read it is that Paul says, don't avenge yourselves because that's what the state's job is, right? That's a kind of flat reading of the text that seems to flow. But there is another problem, though, which is the people who are oppressing Christians are often agents of the state. And so, you know, what do you do in that situation? And so that's where I think we need to dig in a little bit deeper about what Paul's actually saying about the state in 13. And one thing I think we should observe here, and that passage I just read at the end of chapter 12, is a quotation from Deuteronomy 32:35. And in context, God is speaking about punishing the pagan nations for their wickedness. And he's mocking their gods who could not protect them. So here's Deuteronomy 32, 28 through 35. And I'm skipping around a little bit, but you can follow the flow of it. Quote, "For they are a nation void of counsel, and there is no understanding in them. For their rock is not as our rock. Our enemies are by themselves. Vengeance is mine, and recompense for the time when their foot shall slip. For the day of their calamity is at hand, and their doom comes swiftly." So these are agents of the state. These are pagan nations that are being spoken about here. Those are the ones that God is going to seek vengeance against. And if we're following the context of that and applying it in Paul's context, who are the pagan nations that are oppressing Christians? Well, Rome, the magistrate that he's talking about in chapter 13. Hmm. And so this provides, I think, some tension in the text that you don't necessarily pick up on if you're just reading it through. I mean, ultimately, Paul here is quoting a passage which seems to claim the opposite of what he's using it for, which is very odd to say the least. And it opens up the possibility that a surface reading of Romans 13 might be missing Paul's point. So maybe Paul's actual point was not that those in power always do right or are only a threat to wrongdoers, which is what the text literally says. Instead, maybe he was subtly saying that those in power are responsible for punishing the guilty and not the innocent. That would be their job duty if they're actually, you know, performing what they're supposed to be doing.
Right.
But their failure to do so meant that God would hold them accountable when he issued his final judgment against the powers. So it's the state whom God is going to seek vengeance against and not this unknown civilian evildoer, perhaps. So that's at least a possibility as we're reading it. And that opens up the possibility, I think, also for irony in the text, which maybe we could move on to next, unless you have a...
No, that was actually the first thing I was thinking of before I even noticed in your notes that that's what you're about to talk about. So, you know.
Yeah. Okay. So the irony thing, there's a scholar named T.L. Carter who points this out, and it's often not really considered as a possibility. We were just talking about N.T. Wright and Michael Bird. I had a professor named Mark Bird. I just have to stop for a second when I do that. Michael Bird's book on the powers, and on his blog recently, he was writing about Romans 13. And he also has a great article on Romans in the Scott McKnight book that we did in our Libertarian Book Club.
And that's on Romans, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Which people should join.
Jesus is Lord, Caesar is not. That's the title of the book. And it's about New Testament studies. Yeah.
Yep. And we did a book club for LCI on it. And we're going to do more in the future. And folks should definitely consider joining.
LibertarianChristians.com/book club, all one word. And yeah, please join. We do one about once a month. And for what it's worth, they do fill up fast. And so you can go and look at what we're doing in upcoming months and what we've done in the past as well. So,
but anyway, on his blog, he was writing about Romans 13. And I suggested the irony reading that was we kind of are missing something if we don't consider that. And he's like, I don't know if that's there. But I think Mike's a real brilliant, smart guy. But I think on this point, he might be incorrect. And here's why. So to begin with, Paul says, rulers are not a terror to good conduct. He says, do what is good and you will receive their approval. So that's not only hopelessly naive, it also flies in the face of what Paul himself knew and experienced. Paul was a Jew in a land which had been occupied by a series of pagan oppressors. In addition, the epistle to the Romans was written in the mid-50s, and that means that Paul's experience of being unjustly beaten with rods by magistrates in Philippi and his public shaming of those same magistrates was more than 5 years in the past. Not only that, but prior to his conversion, he himself had been given the authority to oppress and kill Christians, a charge which he now understood to be wicked. And also, hello, Jesus, anybody? I mean, but Paul knew that his sinless Lord and Savior had been crucified by the very rulers that he's saying now in Romans are not a terror to good conduct. And he's also a devout Jew. He knows his Bible. He's familiar with stories of pharaohs and Persian bureaucrats that seek to annihilate the Jewish people. He knows about pagan kings being used by God to punish the Jewish people, but who go further even than what God had desired. And there's no doubt that Paul was also aware of the fact that power is often corrupt and doesn't do what it's supposed to do, both because of human ambition and demonic influence. And this suggests one of two possibilities, though they aren't mutually exclusive. Paul may have been expressing a best case scenario of what rulers ought to do, though often don't. Or as T.L. Carter suggested, he may have been writing ironically. So The third option that Paul absolutely 100% means what he says, I understand why if you take a high view of scripture, you'd want to say that. But it's also completely insane that Paul would think that that was literally true.
Well, it seems like you'd like a politician or just somebody saying that politicians always vote in favor of their constituency, or politicians, you know, if Paul were writing this to, you know, the American church, you know, Americans chapter 13, he might be sarcastically saying, for those who are in high elected office, never do so for their own selfish gain.
Right, right.
And we're all thinking, oh yeah, yeah, they're all nice. No, we'd all realize that he's being sarcastic or ironic.
They're all selfless servants of the people whom elected
yeah, them. Right. So yeah, no, I think there's a good case to understand this, because I think irony and sarcasm and that kind of thing is often difficult to discern in a text.
Right.
And we didn't talk about it. I just realized in our conversation about Render Unto Caesar, there's some a little bit of wiggle room for Jesus's response to be a bit of sarcasm. Well, if Caesar thinks it's his, let him have it. That kind of like just, well, okay, fine. That's what he thinks. Then go ahead.
Right.
So I think there's an underappreciated element of humor, sarcasm, irony, that kind of thing in the text.
Yeah, absolutely. So going back to Carter and the irony thing.
And who is this T.L. Carter? I've never heard of him.
He's a biblical scholar who, when I was working on my book, Fight the Powers, which you interviewed me on about at one point.
Yeah, that was our first interview, I think.
It was. What the Bible says about the relationship between spiritual forces and human governments. So I guess kind of like the book that Byrd and Wright wrote, except not nearly as popular and probably not as good, but definitely shorter.
But it's more sound.
I think so, because there are points of disagreement. But that's not to say that their book is not excellent and shouldn't be read. So when I was doing research on Romans 13 and different passages, because basically my book, Fight the Powers, is a biblical theology of the powers. I found Carter, an article that he wrote for a scholarly journal, and I thought he brought up a lot of really good points. So he establishes the use of irony as a writing practice in the ancient world, and he also gives a rationale for its use in this passage. He would say that to communicate a message to a specific audience, which the authorities, if they had gotten a hold of a letter, would not have perceived, you'd use sometimes irony or sarcasm. So mm-hmm. The authorities would have been flattered by this rose-tinted portrait of themselves. They always do what's right. They're so good. But many in Paul's intended audience would have actually known that in practice and in the passage that Paul cited as a proof text, Deuteronomy 32, that's actually not necessarily the case. Those in power often do not behave in this good way. And ultimately, God's going to punish them for misusing their office. And we find this very idea also communicated quite explicitly in the Book of Wisdom, which was a popular Jewish writing of Paul's day. That's part of the Roman Catholic Bible even now. And Wisdom 3 through 6 reads, because authority was given you by the Lord and sovereignty by the Most High, who shall probe your works and scrutinize your counsels. Because though you were ministers of his kingdom, you did not judge rightly, and you did not keep the law, nor walk according to the will of God. Terribly and swiftly he shall come against you, because severe judgment awaits the exalted. For the lowly may be pardoned out of mercy, but the mighty shall be mightily put to the test. And so, you know, we could debate whether that's part of Paul's Bible, but it's certainly part of the Jewish tradition that he's informed by. And so, finally, Carter argues that Paul's injunction in Romans 12 to show love and mercy to one's enemies is the true grounding for Paul's advice to Christians to honor the magistrate in chapter 13. So, if the rulers had behaved as their enemy, what good would rebellion have done? They had no hope of destroying the empire with force, but more than that, it would have entailed being overcome by evil rather than overcoming evil with good. So if it was the duty of the magistrate to reward those who do good, and he instead punished them, he would likewise be punished by God for abusing his authority. If the Christian whom he oppressed responded with love to his oppression and threats, this could shame him into changing his behavior. If not, it would only compound the judgment against him. In any case, I think the responsibility of the Christian was to keep doing good regardless of the consequences, even if the laws of man forbade them from doing so. So as Peter says in Acts 5:29, we must obey God rather than men. So in sum, I don't think Paul really could have meant in Romans 12 through 13 that the magistrate always does what is good, or even that he should always be obeyed. In point of fact, the external literature which Paul alludes to and was aware of teaches that God would judge the state or the leaders for mishandling their duties. In the meantime, the responsibility of Christians is to be beyond reproach, eschewing, that's a hard word to say, eschewing.
It's almost as bad as saying corduroy.
Corduroy. Eschewing violence and corduroy, and instead modeling love. And that love would either shame the oppressor or it would compound the coming judgment against him. And that is, I think, ultimately what Paul is saying for how to deal with any evildoer who comes against you, but I think especially the state. And so I think that's kind of the idea that also bridges 12 and 13.
Yeah. What are your thoughts on how would you have responded? Let's say you were a reporter in the White House press office or press room and Sarah Huckabee Sanders says this. How would you come back with like, you can't go into like, hey, go listen to this episode or go listen right. to this, you know, like 2 hour talk on Romans 13 by someone whose theology is based on, you know, whatever. But like, you got to come back with a, yeah, but no, you got to succinctly come back with a retort. What do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I think Acts 5:29, it's better to obey God than man, I think is ultimately where I would want to go is kind of a something pithy.
It's a little bit of a conversation stopper, or sorry, not conversation stopper, but a little bit of a like a clear retort that there is at least the realm of God versus human authorities, right?
Right. There's a potential contradiction.
Yes.
That just because the state says it doesn't mean that it's okay. Because ultimately, Peter and the apostles are responding to those in power. Those in power are telling them to shut up and stop preaching the gospel.
Right.
So is it very biblical for them to follow that?
Yeah, right.
If Sarah Huckabee Sanders, if she's being consistent, would say yes. And there's this, ultimately, it's this thing that sometimes authoritarians do when they can't actually justify their positions morally or biblically. Mm-hmm. They'll just sort of say, well, Romans 13, that'll cover it up. And so if everything I do is good, then therefore you can't complain. And I think ultimately this reading has been damaging and destructive and anti-human, ultimately, in its application.
Yeah.
Because if it's absolutely true that anything the government does is okay and it's good, and if you do everything right, you have nothing to worry. Well, I mean, first of all, you're going to run into like incredible contradictions when it comes to like, if you like live in the Soviet Union and you're still obeying the laws and you end yeah. up, you end up, because they're trying to meet a quota of arresting people, you end up having to confess to crimes you didn't commit. But even in a situation where the law is more straightforward, and you, let's say you're in a society where it's illegal to preach the gospel. Do you stop preaching the gospel? Because ultimately, what you know, if Paul's to be taken at face value, what he's saying is, well, if you're doing what's right, you have no reason to fear. But preaching the gospel is right. So if you live in a country that doesn't allow you to preach the gospel, you have reason to fear. And so, yeah, I think I'm just really unsatisfied with somebody who wants to say, well, Paul means what he says. Because I think it's first of all false, and it's also something that Paul knew darn well was false. And so I think the ironic reading here that Paul is ultimately talking smack about the state behind their back a little bit in a way that's sort of more coded. And he also lets you know by saying, by the way, here's a hyperlink to the Old Testament. Here's a reference. I'm going to quote the Old Testament. You can go back and read that passage. And that gives the context for what I'm trying to tell you.
Yeah. What's the Greek word for hyperlink in this text?
That's a good question. I know hooper would be part of it. I'm trying to think of what the Greek word for link would be. I'm not sure about that.
I don't know.
I heard you say, what's the Greek word for? And I clicked Bible Works, just like, just pulled that up without thinking.
Really? Did you really? That's so hilarious.
But now it's loading, so it's going to have to wait a minute.
You know, we're going to have to look up what hyperlink might have been.
Anytime someone says, what's the Greek or what's the Hebrew, I pull up Bible Works.
Yeah, right. So I think this is really kind of an important element to understanding Romans 13. Although obviously, you know, in 26 minutes, we haven't really covered the exhaustive, you know, here's how to understand Romans 13. So with respect to the other views that LCI has put out, like both Jacob Winograd, Norman Horn, Carrie and Gregory in the Reformed Libertarians podcast, we've all talked about Romans 13. Does this fit in with most of those, with all of those? Are there some contradictions and disagreement in your mind? Or is this just kind of one angle on it that you take?
If I recall, Jacob takes the position that it's like a best case scenario. Is that fair?
Yeah, I don't know if he would use those words.
It's like, this is what the state's supposed to do. And if they're not doing it, you don't have to listen.
Yeah, that's right. Like the ideal. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Prescriptive. Yes.
I think that could be part of what Paul's doing here. Basically, Paul is saying, this is what the state says of itself.
Okay.
This is how it's supposed to be functioning. So basically, he's calling them as a witness against themselves.
Okay.
Right. So if the state's not doing this, then what's going to happen to them? What would be the consequences of them failing to live up to this expectation or this standard? And he tells you in Romans 12, vengeance is mine, I'll repay.
What does that mean for the people, though, listening? Like, okay, so that's the judgment of the state, of the authorities.
Right.
What about the people, the recipients of this letter? Like, what are they supposed to do with this?
Yeah, I think what Paul is ultimately trying to say to them, I mean, so first of all, I think they understand that the state doesn't do this. I think ultimately what he's trying to get to,
especially if they know Paul.
Yeah, and also they live in Rome, so they're very close to Caesar.
Yeah.
So I think what Paul is ultimately telling them is they should continue to express love and obedience whenever possible toward the state, because that is their duty as Christians, to nonviolently non-resist and to leave vengeance to God.
Yeah.
And so if the state is oppressing them, if they're failing to live up to their vocation, then they're going to get theirs, I think is ultimately what Paul is saying.
When you say they, you're talking about the authorities, right?
The authorities.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. The word they could have applied to the authorities or the people recipients. I just wanted to clarify that. We were reading, as we were kind of, before we started this, we were reading different translations. And I want to read David Bentley Hart's translation of verse 5 of Romans 13. And I think this really is kind of nice. It kind of spells out in a little bit more clear way than the other translations that I've read. So to become subordinate is a necessity, not only on account of outrage or wrath, but on account of conscience as well. And so this idea of necessity is something a little bit more practical. It's a little bit more prudential. Norman Horn actually talks about the, you know, as a matter of prudence, this isn't really about God's statement on what are authorities. This is more, I don't want to misrepresent Norman's position, but the idea generally at least would be, this is not God's, hey, here's what the state should be. So in some ways, I think he disagrees with Jacob, but hey, we're ecumenical here and we certainly have our disagreements about certain texts. But, you know, at the end of the day, you can't really preach Romans 13 at the gates of Auschwitz, like not as an authoritarian or even as a state or even as a, I mean, anybody, you can't say, oh, well, you just can't quote this verse and say, well, nope, hand them over. It's just not the way it works.
Yeah,
that's not what's going on here.
And going back to Matthew 17, which we quoted in conjunction with Render to Caesar on that last podcast we did, that kind of also brings this context you talked about, like, what does he mean for conscience sake? Mm-hmm. And Jesus says to Peter that the reason that they should give the tax is not because they're obligated to or because the person who's going to receive the tax is owed it, but to not cause offense. And so the message of the gospel is so important that Christians are to basically live peaceably as far as it depends on them with everyone, which is what Romans 12 says. And so I think the idea that, you know, we have this two options, we can either be complicit in everything evil the state does, or we can violently try to overthrow it, is not really the answer that Paul or Jesus are giving us. And that's a little bit disappointing, the idea that we have to continue to show love to our enemies, as they oppress us. But I do think it's the Christian, it's the biblical New Testament idea. One thing real quick, guys, before as we're wrapping up Romans 13, what some people sort of take out of Romans 13 is that, let's say we forget everything I said before, and Paul is basically giving a prescription about how what the state is and how it should be looked at. So is Paul saying that the state is the only form of government or order that can or should exist? And so for a libertarian or anarchist Christian, they would say, is that the case? I mean, is a state financed by stolen tax money the only means by which those who desire to do evil to their neighbors can be held accountable? And I think libertarians would say, no, there are other more voluntary means of maintaining basic peace, order, and justice than our current system of compulsory taxation and the state's monopoly on violence. So these other systems, the voluntary systems, now I'm thinking about it, the voluntary systems lack some of the significant downsides of states, like their inherent violence and authoritarianism.
Yep.
So I don't think that even if you take a more traditional view of Romans 13, that it's anti-libertarian or anti-anarchist in that sense. Because what ultimately Paul is concerned about is an order that can guarantee these good things, not what that specific order has to look like.
Right, right. All good stuff, man. I really appreciate you joining me to talk about these problem passages. We've already talked about Render Unto Caesar. In this one, we just tackled Romans 13. And so therefore, we don't have to close our doors and we can remain Christian libertarians or libertarian Christians. And so for a future episode, we're going to talk about soldiers, swords, and some, you know, miscellaneous tough passages that people just kind of throw out at you as proof text of, well, you know, Jesus said you should buy a sword or something. And so we'll talk about that in a future episode. So thanks for joining me, man.
Thanks, Doug. Appreciate you.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Libertarian Christian Podcast. If you like today's episode, we encourage you to rate us on Apple Podcasts to help expand our audience. If you want to reach out to us, email us at podcast@libertarianchristians.com. You can also reach us at LCI Official on Twitter. And of course, we are on Facebook and have an active group you are welcome to join. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
The Libertarian Christian Podcast is a project of the Libertarian Christian Institute, a registered 501c3 nonprofit. If you'd like to find out more about LCI, visit us on the web at libertarianchristians.com. The voiceovers are by Matt Bellis and Catherine Williams. As of episode 115, our audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.
Hello, everyone. It's Doug from the Libertarian Christian Podcast. You might notice already that this recording sounds quite a bit different from usual. In fact, it probably sounds pretty crappy. Well, I'm doing this to show you something pretty amazing. As you might know, the guys over at Podsworth Media have been producing my show for several years, quite a while, hundreds of episodes. And now they have a brand new online app for taking rough recordings like this one and making them sound a whole lot cleaner and a lot more listenable in just a few easy clicks. So here are some of the core features. They remove background noise. It reduces plosives, which is really handy for me because I often forget to put my pop filter on before I do a YouTube video. Because pop filters look terrible when you're on camera. It fixes clipping. It removes clicks and pops. It evenly levels dialogue so that you don't have somebody talking really quietly. And then somebody talking really loud because they're too close to the mic or too far away from the mic. How do you use it? It's easy. You go to podsworth.com, you click get started, and because you're a listener to one of the Libertarian Christian Institute's podcasts, you can get 50% off your first order by entering the promo code LCI50. That's LCI50. And you will get 50% off your first order. If you are doing anything like a podcast, a video, a sermon, an audiobook, anything that's spoken word, you want to use podsworth.com and clean up your audio to be even more professional and polished.